onto Mane, and Liverpool lead.
The Premier League is back, and Off the Ball is the only place you can hear live commentary of Liverpool's march to the title, the battle for the Champions League places, and the fight for survival. Every big game exclusively live between now and the end of the season, starting this Wednesday from 7 p.m. with Manchester City against Arsenal. Yeah! And we'll also have live score updates on the OTB Sports app. OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Oh, the shame that will get. You've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything, religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
We are edging closer and closer to normality. The La Liga is back. The Bundesliga has been back for weeks. The Premier League is coming back next week. And the Serie A also has a return date. So there will be no shortage of football on the TVs over the next couple of weeks. Welcome along to Team 33 and a call here with you for the next hour or so. I will be joined shortly by Paul Muir and by Kieran Bradley because we're continuing our search for the best football film of all time. On tonight's episode, we will be focusing on victory or escape to victory, depending on whether you're listening in the States or listening in the UK. A 1981 film starring Sylvester Stallone and Michael Caine, a brilliant film, and it is essentially the original Mean Machine concept idea. We will return to Mean Machine in a few weeks, but this is almost like a weird wartime version of that show. If you want to listen back to any of this show, you can find us as part of the OTB Podcast Network. The best place to find that is in the brand new OTB Sports app. You can find that in the Google Play Store and Apple Store as well. It's looking well, it's coming together nicely, and it has all of the Off the Ball family in there as well, video, podcast, and articles as well. Or if you're more of a visual person, you can find this on YouTube as well, on youtube.com/offtheball. Now, let's get into Escape to Victory.
How long will it take?
Well, you must realize it's my busy time. Everybody wants to escape in the good weather.
In 1942, the Nazis thought they were sitting on top of the world, never suspecting that they could be toppled in one conflict, the most unusual battle of the war.
It has been decided that a German national team will play a combined team from the prisoners of war of the occupied territories.
That's crazy.
Okay, I'm ready to sign up.
Sign up, eh?
And you ought to be exhibited in Paris like performing fleas?
What about me?
Get out.
A stacked game. The Third Reich's finest against a ragged bunch of prisoners of war. The Germans thought they had it made.
They couldn't run about for 90 minutes. They'd be chucking their guts up.
Am I good? Or am I good?
What's your name?
You know my name.
What's your name?
I decided to join the team.
The American? No.
You use that bloody American style again here and you'll be fast.
Look, you're playing English, I play American.
Can you do with your mouth shut?
Hey, the mouth and the hand work together. It's a team.
This match is a propaganda stunt for the Germans. It's a wonderful opportunity for us. The Allied High Command called them crazy, and maybe they were.
We want you to contact the resistance for us and arrange the escape of the football team.
I want to thank you all for your concern, but I'm really not planning on seeing Paris until after the war.
Well, I'm an orphan. I have no parents, no money. I'm not married. I don't even have a pet. And anything I might say in my sleep to the contrary can't be held against me.
We don't want to be shot as a spy, do we?
No. I don't want to be shot as anything.
Victory, starring Sylvester Stallone, Michael Caine, Max von Sydow, and introducing Pele.
How'd you like to play football against the Germans?
Why not?
Is the time for heroes. Victory. You've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, that was the trailer for the 1981 film Escape to Victory, starring Michael Caine, Pele, and Sylvester Stallone. What a lineup. Kieran Bradley and Paul Muir join me on the line to discuss. How are you getting on, lads?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad, no. I mean, when you read it out loud like that, it just kind of dawns on you just how surreal it is. I've watched this film nearly every Stephen's Day for my existence, as long as I remember football. But just when you hear those names out loud, it just still doesn't quite sink in. But yeah, looking forward to a classic of mine.
Yeah, this is a film that I was forced to sit through as a kid when I was younger at Christmas time, like you, Paul. It's not something I remember fondly, but I rewatched it the last day. I actually really enjoyed it. I see the novelty of it, and I see why it is a classic Christmas film. Kieran Bradley, I think you were watching this for the first time as well this week, were you?
Yeah, I was coming in fresh. I'm the same as you, actually. I was pleasantly surprised. It's one of those films that you kind of know a few of the cultural references to, and the kind of Pelé bicycle kick and Bobby Moore and all this stuff, but I thought it was actually pretty well shot and enjoyed it a lot, yeah.
It's got such a weird cast, first of all, because you have Michael Caine, who's in his 40s. He's not exactly the Michael Caine now, where he's all suave and old and he's just a cuddly old man. You have Michael Caine at the edge of his stardom. You have Sylvester Stallone. 1981, this film came out, so this is the same time as the Rocky film. So arguably, he is the biggest movie star in the world right now. You have Pelé, who is out of near enough retirement age. I don't know what age Pelé officially retired from playing football, but he was spending some time in Hollywood, having spent some time in the American Soccer League. So he's in this film. You have three World Cup winners in this film, and I will give 5 gold stars to Paul Moore or Kieran Bradley if you can name the other two.
Ozzy Ardiles
and Bobby Moore and Pelé.
Yes, three World Cup winners in the one film, and yet the football in this film isn't great.
I think amongst Kane, who Ardiles has said he couldn't even run 20 yards, never mind kick a ball. So Kane, in terms of his football ability, is woeful. And you know what, lads? We could spend an hour on Sylvester Stallone alone because, Jesus Christ, like, we'll get into it, but we have to work our way in. A hot take is that everything that transpires in the film, you can make an argument that Stallone is really not needed for this, and he's actually detrimental to the overall development of the team, but we'll get on to that later. I have a theory as well that I think the footballers, your Mike Summerbees, your Russell Osmonds, they all get memory lines. Even Ireland's Kevin O'Callaghan, who was a winger for Ipswich, he would have been part of the Ipswich team. John Walken there, he's 5 Ipswich players in this, actually, who ended up playing in the final match. The footballers, I think, are better actors than the actors are footballers.
That's not a bad shot. The one thing I noticed about this film, and we'll get deeper into the football aspect of it later on in the show, but the one thing I noticed about this, and I'm not sure, Paul, you having watched this throughout your life, I've never really been able to figure out, is Pelé's voice dubbed in this movie? Because I can't tell whether it's just the 1980 shot or if it actually looks, if he pre-recorded his lines and then acted out him saying those lines without actually saying them. Because the sound seems a little bit off.
Could have been, I'm not too sure, it could be ADR. So like a lot of films that you do, they film on the day and maybe the audio doesn't sync to the visuals. They go back into the booth and maybe re-record the audio. But I'm pretty certain that is Pelé's actual voice. You mean, he has the famous scene with, you know, when Michael Caine's going through all the tactics and like get the ball out wide. Don't dribble with it. You don't have the legs. You just give me the ball. And I'll go from here to here to here to here to here. Goal. Good. And he has that, you know, he's one of the players that you in a halftime goes, don't go, Hutch. We need you. We can't win. So I'm pretty certain that's Pelé's voice, although his acting is pretty shady in other stuff I've seen him in. But I don't think he's the worst in this, if I'm perfectly honest.
To be fair, he deserves a starring role in this. For everyone who hasn't seen this film, we are talking about Escape to Victory, or Victory as it originally came out as. And the film is basically about Allied prisoners of war in a prisoner of war camp in somewhere in Germany. And one of the German officers gets talking to Michael Caine, who turns out he is a former West Ham footballer who his football career was sort of ruined by the war. So you have a bunch of players who previously played international football for England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland in this prisoner of war camp in Germany, and they decide to have a football match. The idea behind it is that it'll boost the morale of the British officers and the prisoners, and it will also work as a good propaganda machine for the German army as they absolutely trounce these prisoners, essentially. They're the former footballers who aren't in shape. So that's what the Germans think. that's not how it turns out, because in the background, Sylvester Stallone, who plays an American soldier that is in this camp, decides he wants to escape. So that's where the escape comes. So there's a nice little background to this. The film originally, the storyline is based on a true story. It's not a true story. It turns out it's actually a myth, but it's a game that supposedly took place during World War II called the Death Match. It took place in Ukraine. The Soviets had planned to put the Ukrainian players up against the Germans, and the idea was that the Germans would translate and use this match as a propaganda thing, but then the Ukrainians went out and thrashed the Germans 5-3 in a game, and then subsequently those Ukrainians were thrown in worker camps or prison camps. That didn't actually happen, but that's where the story comes from. It's a very good story. How well is it told, Kieran?
Oh, reasonably. Like, you have to give it a good bit of artistic license, but I quite enjoyed it. Sorry, it just occurred to me there when you said it was 5-3. I was like, I don't think any game before about 1970 finished 0-0. They always seem to be like 7-9 or all sorts. But I thought it was... my thoughts on it are that with any football film, any football-related film, it kind of exists in its own sphere, because you go into it thinking this is a football film, so it's likely to be a little bit shit, frankly. And once you allow for that, you're a little bit freed up by it. I liked it. I like the fact that Michael Caine is effectively playing Bobby Moore, given that he's a West Ham and England footballer already. He's got the same complexion and kind of fair hair. I thought Bobby Moore was actually a reasonably good actor in it too, albeit he's not got that many speaking roles. It was shot nicely, leaving aside the football scenes for the moment, it kind of went into that oeuvre of the war film, the kind of Where Eagles Dare and things like that. There were a lot of nice shots, and it seemed, it was historically pleasing. It might not have been historically kind of accurate. I was pretty happy with it.
So John Huston is actually the director of this film. He has no association with football films. He's more of a serious director, and this was a real step to the left for him. How do you think he got on, Paul? Because this was really him out of his comfort zone, and as we know, having watched a couple of football films at this stage, that it's not an easy thing to bring football over to Hollywood and have it be pleasing, first of all, for the audience, and also have that grasp of a bit of drama in it.
Yeah, like as you mentioned, Huston's reputation is like he's one of the most famous directors of all time. He's a two-time Oscar winner. He's made the likes of like The African Queen, Pritchie's Honor, and he made Man Who Would Be King, which is a bit of a cult classic as well, Michael Caine, just for its endlessly quotable. And I think Rob Brydon's impression in that film is worth seeing alone. But no, I think it's actually it's a weird hybrid of films in that you have the kind of the prison break plot line, which I think was kind of essential to keep the American audiences hooked in terms of a World War II drama, and how you have your elevator pitch, what's the film like. You mentioned the score, which is Will Conti. He also did the music for Rocky, so Stallone would have known him as well for that iconic music, which is just as famous as anything else in that film. And he kind of cleared every odds about the Elmer Bernstein, which is the guy who did this for The Great Escape, which you mentioned there. So Huston knows kind of the nods to get, and like in these films, you expect certain things. The one that kind of is a bit different is that, and it's I'm not going to say troubling, but it is a bit unsettling in that they don't really go for the caricature in Nazis. And I know Max von Sydow is a really, really good actor. God rest his soul, passed away not too long ago. But he kind of plays it with a weird kind of, you can kind of empathize with him. But even, when you see the Pelé overhead kick, he gets up and he applauds and I'm all about the purity of football and it's nothing to do with my politics. But you kind of have to remind that he's still a Nazi. I don't think there's enough villainy there that was portrayed across. That's the impression I got watching it again later. And oddly, the scene that kind of hit me, and I've seen it so many times, was the drama bit when Colby, Michael Caine's character, is trying to get his list of players. And he essentially does a version of Schindler's List of football. He calls for the Polish players and the Czech players who weren't acknowledged by the Germans at the time, by the Nazis. And it was oddly moving when they come up on their kind of skeletal and their just that shot when they've been through literal horrors of war and are just standing there in front of them. So I think Houston does manage to get in those little bits of drama, which is really to its credit, because this is nothing more than an escapist 3 o'clock Sunday matinee film. But there are bits that stay with me. And then looking back on it now, there are bits that I find a bit baffling, like Stallone's detour to Paris really drags the pace of the film down. And ultimately, I know they make the moral decision to stay on and keep fighting, and it's a moral victory. But that whole plot line really doesn't pay off in any way, with any shape or form. And it takes away from the overall theme of the film, which is, you know, triumph over adversity and, you know, the spirit of the beautiful game and never give up and come back and all that stuff. So before we even get on to the inaccuracies of what the football game is like, I mean, scoring 3 goals with 10 men, I mean, that will never happen. But there are some hormonal changes in it. But I think my overall impression is that the footballers do enough believable footballing, there's a better word there somewhere, to make it believable. The actors carry enough gravitas that you believe it. John Ford directs, this isn't his best film, but he's still an Oscar-winning director, so there's enough good cinematography. He knows how to work actors. And, I mean, a credit to any directors. If you believe, like, you do buy, as you mentioned, Bobby Moore's good in it, Pelé's good in it. And, I mean, any director who can take a footballer and put them in a film and make them somewhat believable is clearly has some passion for it. Because, as we've seen in Goal and some certain cameos, it doesn't always work out that way with footballers.
Yeah, and I totally agree with your point of the whole Sylvester Stallone going to Paris, bringing down the sort of pace of the film. It didn't pay off in any great way. We'll return to that in a little bit later on the show. But I want to get into the cast first of all, because it is quite a big cast. And I know Michael Caine has kind of got on to bigger and better things since this, but this was relatively young Michael Caine, who he would have been a big British star, but in terms of stardom in the US, this would have been a big enough film for him at the time. I think he's quite good in this. Again, the similarities between him and Bobby Moore are obvious throughout the film. The relationship that he has with Major Von Steiner, who we'll talk about in a little bit as well, it is believable, and he does play a believable role. I think the balance between striking a player who is happy enough just to see out the war, I think that he does that quite well, along with not wanting to show that as if he's happy in the camp. He doesn't want to escape, but he's not exactly content with living there. Kieran, what do you think of Michael Caine in this film?
He was fine, I suppose. I mean, Michael Caine, to a degree, seems to play the same character in most films that he's in. But that's not to do him down. He's a very kind of magnetic presence on the screen. I think to kind of touch on a point that Paul made about Max von Sydow and the Nazi officer there, there's a kind of somewhat pleasing dynamic between him and the officer who sets up the game. I think what Houston and perhaps the scriptwriters were kind of eking towards was that there was a human side to you know, Nazi guards or whatever, who the kind of weight of history had kind of taken them along with the tide. Now, of course, that's obviously problematic in a lot of senses, but it did kind of hint at the humanism involved and the fact that football can unite people, obviously, as we saw also in World War One. As for Caine, look, he plays quite a good kind of unifying officer type. He's obviously it's quite funny. I was struck by when he's doing the tactical stuff. I was like, oh my god, this doesn't strike you as someone who's particularly interested in football. And I'd be surprised if he wasn't in some way interested in football. So I don't know if that was the writer's fault. But I did enjoy it, and like, he kind of knits it together. Yeah, I would touch again on a point that you both made around the Stallone kind of sidetrack into Paris, and then this sort of odd love interest that seems to sort of go nowhere as well. It was very odd. It kind of took away from what was quite an interesting dynamic within the camp. But he was reasonably good for the film and a good presence on screen.
You mentioned Stallone there, so he is by far and away the biggest star in this movie, because at this point in time, 1981, he has been in 2 Rocky films, and he's the biggest star in the world, biggest action actor in Hollywood at the minute. So it seemed an odd one that he was in this film, and it turns out it was by sheer chance that he ended up in this film. He wasn't cast in this role. Essentially, what happened was he was buying a new house in Malibu, and one of the producers of the show was selling the house. And as he was discussing the buying and selling of this house, he had to hand the script of this film. And Stallone came back a couple of days later and said, I want to be in it. And it turns out that Stallone actually had quite a strong role in the production of this film and how the storyline would go. As you can kind of see throughout the film, you can see that Stallone is the key figure in the film and that a lot of the plot is based around him, even though he's not one of the key actors or doesn't play a key role in the actual game. So you have him begging to be on the team, and then you have the side story of him trying to escape from it, the escape to Paris, followed by the return to the team, and then also the big moment at the end of the game where he saves the penalty. So we'll discuss his actual acting and footballing ability in a bit. But as for the saving the penalty at the end, it turned out that he actually wanted to be the scorer of the winning goal, because obviously he played a key role in the storyline. He wanted to be the key figure. He wanted to be the man with the big moment at the end, but the producers had to remind him that goalkeepers, they do not score goals. So he wasn't allowed to do that. So inevitably, he had to have a big moment like saving the penalty. Throughout this film, I just thought that Stallone was playing Rocky. It was just, he was playing Rocky Balboa in a football film. It was the same performance that you have seen throughout his career. And he's quite irritating in this film, if I'm being quite honest.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that anecdote just sort of shows you one, the clear thing is that he having a breeze about football, which is understandable. I'm not going to hit him for that one. But thank God, you were talking about Dan Houston. Thank Christ they talked him down a bit. That, and even my impression is even after he saved the penalty, he kicked the ball away, so they're still in play. So I was still like thinking, I'm not getting the football side of it yet. But just, I found it quite annoying as well. Like, even his first introduction, you know, when he basically rugby tackled some of the guy and goes, you play the English way, I'll play the American way. He is kind of the quintessential, you know, American kind of blow in with the arrogance and everything we associate with America, with kind of like the crassness and stuff like that. But I always got the vibe that Kane kind of accepted it and kind of indulged in a bit. Because it was the same, he was like, I don't want to get on. I don't want to be on your team. And when Bobby Kane's character is going away in the car. And then 5 minutes later, he's basically begging because he wants to get in the team when the team starts getting digs. It was never really established sort of any sort of familiar bond between the two characters. So I get the impression that Kane only kind of admitted him on because he wanted him to escape. But then, as I said earlier, you know, breaking his goalkeeper's arm, then he gets enrolled as a trainer. And even as a trainer, he's basically just parroting what Colby says. And it's obnoxious just hearing it back again, you know, when they get the gear and he's like, who needs this and who needs that? So he's pretty much a bad goalkeeper, a bad trainer, culminates in poor Kevin O'Callaghan having his arm broken. And in fairness, as a keeper, decent shot stopper.
Parries too much. He parries way too much. Catch the ball. He's coming straight at you. He's just punching him away. He's like a modern-day goalkeeper.
I get the impression that I'm not sure how tight the script was, because I get the vibe that a lot of it was maybe improv and done on the fly to give Stallone some sort of screen time that his Oscar win could probably throw around a bit of weight and say, I need a bit more dramatic angle here and there. But as we mentioned, not an awful lot of it pays off. And just from hearing on the set, from anecdotes on the set, that him and Kane were fond of going to the airport every Friday and maybe getting a flight to Paris or London for a weekend away. So I'm not too sure if they're overly friendly with some of the footballers. There's a story of Kevin Beattie, who was a stand-in in the football himself, challenged Sloan to an arm wrestle. He beat Sloan and he got the bump. And so stuff like that, it doesn't really surprise me. But, I mean, if you want to sell the script originally, and if you want to sell it overseas, you need a marquee name. And as you said, there's no picking Stallone at the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's what made this film, what gave it its stardom, essentially. So you will allow Stallone to take charge a little bit if he's going to make this film successful in the end. There are too many footballers to mention. We mentioned Bobby Murray, we mentioned Ozzy Ardiles, but Pele is a leading actor in this film. And to be fair, he's not bad. He's pretty good. Some of the early stuff in the film where he's talking about, he's given his background and he's from the Trinidads, and it's a little bit sketchy. You're not really sure how he's going to get on. But as the film goes on and he starts talking a bit more about football, it's quite good. His acting on the ground, I thought it would have been better when he was injured, because, you know, the Brazilians at that time and throughout the ages have been known to be a little bit more dramatic when it comes to tackles. So you would have expected Pele to know how to feign an injury a little bit better. But pretty solid performance.
I don't know. I thought, like, the at the start, when he's first introduced and he's doing the kick-ups, the exposition from the writers is literally like, oh, well, I grew up doing this on the streets of Trinidad with an orange. And it was like, because they needed to go, yeah, lads, we know this is Pele, so just bear with us for a second while we explain why he's in the film. Oh, man, he's incredibly wooden. And, like, you know, I don't blame him. He's not an actor by trade. There wasn't an enormous amount of him doing anything footballing-wise, obviously, because the majority of the match, he's actually injured. So that was quite odd, really. I suppose, actually, you can kind of look at these. That's a kind of strange theme, that obviously Pele not playing a lot of football, and then Michael Caine, in a lot of the middle of the film, not getting much screen time. Now, I know, as you said, that Stallone had obviously been earmarked as the kind of star power, but I think that dynamic really took away from Caine's potential to deliver some sort of performance here. But yeah, I mean, the kind of wider theme, I suppose, of Pele and the players and their acting, it was fine, because, I mean, you allow them a certain amount of leeway because they are footballers and they're not actors. Pele's delivery of the lines wasn't amazing, but as you said, Paul, with the chalkboard, when he's got the chalk and he's kind of showing where he's going to run, dribble, score, etc., was quite funny. So you got to give him a pass on comic merit alone.
Well, just given, like, the history of his interviews, I can almost imagine Pele doing that in a World Cup dressing room for the Brazil team. Like, that's where Pele stands for me. It's quite odd, though, because obviously Pele played in a period of football where not every game was on TV, and there isn't actually that much footage of him playing.
I think he would have barely known at the time, because he would have been in the Cosmos, I think. When the German players scored, Baumann actually played the Cosmos as well. So at the time, they would have had, you know, the big invasion. There was Beckenbauer, Kreutz. So this was when soccer was just making its first imprint in America. So I'd say his profile to the unknown and the blow-in football fans who wouldn't really know him too well, I suppose a bit clever on the future then, get the world's most famous player in. I mean, and with regards to the chalkboard, I can pretty much imagine Cristiano Ronaldo saying that in part every game, you can do the ball, I'll do what you want, you know. So I don't think it's entirely beyond the realms of possibility. I didn't mind him, to be honest. And I think every one of the little footballers gets their time to shine. Like Mike Summerby has that line when Michael Caine goes to him, do you want to play football for extra rations? He's like, oh, he's muttered, I have to strangle. So I think they all kind of, John Wark was the only one, because apparently his Glaswegian accent was so thick that they overdubbed his voice, and he only noticed when the film actually premiered that they used someone else. So I don't think, in terms of all the footballers, I think LA got one of the better deals in comparison to some of his teammates.
Do you think he counts the bicycle kick as part of one of his 1,000 goals? It wouldn't be like him. Now, moving on to the Germans, and I suppose there's only one real key role when it comes to the Nazi team or the Nazi players, and that's Major Karl von Steiner, which is a great name for a German Nazi. He's played by Max von Sydow, who is quite a good actor. I think he plays this role quite well. We've already touched on the sort of humanistic side to the Nazis, and that's something that is portrayed in quite a few war films. But just based on von Steiner's performance, how did you rate it?
Yeah, I think right from the intro, he's not kind of portrayed as the kind of the twiddling mustache evil Nazi, although we do get brief glimpses of one of his higher officers has an eye patch. So, you know, whenever you see someone with an eye patch in a movie, they're probably evil. And I do think we got one of those von Bismarck twirling Nazi cliches that we're kind of used to seeing. But right from the off, he kind of treats Kane, Kane's Patrick Colby with respect. He talks about football. He says, he offers some sympathy and says, it's horrible that your career has ended. And Michael Caine, he says, briefly interrupted. So in other films, you know, giving cheek to Nazi officer, if you're POW, would probably get you in the, get you punished or something like that. But he kind of goes along with it. So right from the off, you're established the character dynamics to see each other as equals. I do think that he's such a strong actor. I mean, you know him from The Exorcist and Game of Thrones fans, you know him as the Three-Eyed Raven. That he does convey the empathy and his altruistic kind of spirit of football, and that has to be played in the best way, as you see when the Pelé goal goes in. And even the kind of shock and awe when he learns that the referee has been bribed so that the Nazis win. It isn't the cartoon character, but again, I did have an issue that I don't think an awful lot was made of just the harsh conditions of why they wanted to escape. It's not that type of film, you know, it really isn't. It's an escapist 3 o'clock film that you go with. But again, I still don't think there's any escaping that, you know, he is an athlete. So for me, it was well acted, but maybe not enough peril for the... And I know that's weird to see someone get shot in the very first game, but you don't really see how it affects the players personally. Like, for example, if there's a scene when they take someone out and Stallone gets thrown in the box, but he deserves to get thrown in the box because he escaped and he came back. But there's not an awful lot of... I don't know how to say it. They're clearly prisoners of war, but there's not a lot of jeopardy in their private life before the match goes on, aside from obviously
being. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, they do try to sort of excuse it a little bit in the script when they're talking about how some of the Germans think that the war's already over, and as do the players or the prisoners of war at the time. Michael Caine mentions earlier on in the film that, you know, the players just want to do their time and be done with it and finish off the war healthy and alive, essentially. But I would agree there's not enough emphasis on how bad the Nazis actually were in this film. And even von Steiner himself, there's not enough jeopardy for him if this goes wrong for him, because he's the one that's setting this up. And even though one of the players escapes, he still isn't really punished by his higher ranking officials, and they don't really portray the Nazis as a sort of a strong force, which is probably done on purpose as well, because this is coming to the sort of midpoint of the war where the Nazis are struggling. I do want to talk about the plot and talk about that Paris scene now, because essentially, for those who haven't seen the film, what's happened is Stallone wants to escape from the camp this whole time, but he finally gets his chance. He escapes to Paris, and he's sent there by British officials to meet with the resistance, and basically they want to plan to help this football team escape once they are done with this match, or once they get at least half of the game done. And he stays in a shelter with a young woman who is a weird sort of sidetrack to the even sidetrack of the plot, because they just try to insert this love interest for no particular reason. I think that was probably just a Hollywood technique at that time. But the plot itself doesn't finish out, because yes, the resistance do help him, but they help him by saying, you need to go back to the prison with the other prisoners, go to the match as normal, and then we will help you escape through tunnels underneath the stadium. And the prisoners do go to the match, they go to the stadium, and the resistance do dig through the tunnels, but that's not actually how they escape. So essentially, that plot dragged on for about 20, 25 minutes of the film and reached no particular conclusion. So, Paul, I know you have already raised issue with this. Kieran, what's your thoughts on it?
It's totally redundant. Like, the whole, the kind of scales fell from my eyes a little bit when he said that Stallone had a big input into the script, because you can imagine him just effectively crafting an action scene, an escape scene for himself. Like, I must admit, I sort of mentally checked out for about 10 minutes in there, but when I was back in, I was like, why is he climbing over the shower and clambering out of this and all sorts? So it was mad. And also, like, I understand that you need a kind of subplot or a bit of peril, as Paul said, or something along those lines. But it just seems so so stupid, really. Like, and particularly given the fact that during the match, spoiler alert, they go into the bath and they see that there are bubbles rising, and then eventually it becomes clear that the people are tunneling from underneath and ready to kind of spring them from Nazi prison ship. But like, at the end of the film, so they go out there for the second half, and at the end of the film, I'm kind of like scanning how long we've got left to see what the kind of, you know, the resolution of this will be, and then the film just ends. So like, I suppose it's a bit of a signal to directors and actors, and i.e. the relationship between a director and a lead actor for future reference, to basically say, listen, we're the ones who write the script, you stick to the acting, we'll do this, like we'll craft the film as best we can because that's what we do, you're the actor. Now obviously there are people that are skilled for that, but I mean, Stallone just absolutely murders the middle part of this film. Like it's so out of time, and it's kind of unnecessary because as we talked about, there's no real peril there anyway. Like, you know, they're not under threat of being shot or something if they lose the game. So I don't know. It really was a big black mark against the film for me.
And it's all entirely dependent on that child coming onto the pitch before the game with the flowers to tell Stallone the breakout was at half time. So we're not going to pick holes through everything, but that's a pretty big one. So if that kid doesn't get onto the pitch, isn't in the ground, isn't tackled by a steward, I presume there were stewards back then, and also at halftime, there's a scene when the English majors kind of see the Allies coming back onto the pitch and they look at themselves like, well, bloody hell, like, it's gone. They were prisoners too, those two kind of dandy officers. So how did they know the breakout was staged for halftime? Because it was the French element of the resistance that only told Stallone through the kid with the flowers.
We'll
be here all day.
It's a needless point because essentially they just escape using the crowd who run onto the pitch, overpowering the Nazi army with guns and dogs. It was a real miracle that this ever happened. But if we're picking holes in every plot of every film, then you end up with nothing. So I thought overall the plot of this film is quite good. I do want to talk about the actual football in this film, because after all, this is a football show and we have picked holes at every other football film for the football acting. So we'll take a quick break there. Coming up after the break, we will get in depth with the football. Now, welcome back to Team 33, and a call here with you. I'm joined on the line by Kieran Bradley and Paul Muir because we are talking about Escape to Victory, the 1981 film starring Sylvester Stallone and Michael Caine and Pelle, as I mentioned earlier on, and Bobby Moore and Ozzy Ardiles and several other professional or semi-professional footballers at this time, because most of the people who are in this film are bordering on retirement or have retired already. Lads, so the climax of this movie, it is the football match between the Nazis and the Allied prisoners of war. First of all, the referee, you know, you may forget about him as a man because he was paid off by those Nazis 100%.
Yeah, there was the disallowed goal contains the most egregious back pass I've ever seen on a football pitch. There's a German defender who passes about 4 yards back in his own box, and they deserve to be punished for that. So the referee, for that alone, is, as you say, is forgotten as a man.
The football itself, so the Germans, we do know that the German team have several German internationals on it, so You're expecting them to be better than Allied prisoners of war, who are former players and haven't really been training properly. So you expect them to probably dominate the game somewhat. But if it wasn't for Sylvester Stallone's horrific goalkeeping at the start, it probably wouldn't have been 3-0 going into this game. We'll talk about further on how realistic the comeback is. But Stallone's goalkeeping alone in this film, how he goes from not being able to stop anything, jumping in two-footed, which we'll also touch on some of the tackles in this film, but his goalkeeping's all over the place. You wouldn't trust him to guard your net at all. Paul, what's your thoughts on Stallone?
Would you believe that Gordon Banks apparently was on set as the goalkeeping advisor for Sylvester Stallone, and apparently, shock, he didn't pay that much attention to him, and I think it shows. I mean, as I said, right from the off, with the rugby tackle and the flair, you know this guy doesn't get it, but I mean, not even knowing where to stand, for a corner, and they made such a big deal out of that, that, you know, going into the game, he didn't even know. I mean, I don't know where to start. Between his technique of just palming stuff out straight back into goal, tackling with his feet insistently, and I know David De Gea is kind of invented the using your feet as a keeper, but this is just completely different stuff going on altogether. He is horrific. Well, in a weird way, it kind of does capture that period of football, because goalkeepers were battered, basically. It was a free-for-all if ever went into a box. So, you know, you have stories of keepers like Bernd Chapman and all that stuff playing on with injuries. So, in that sense, it's a bit realistic. And I think it's never enough to afford that when you see them play football for the start, they're on these terrible pitches in the POW. So, you kind of give them some sort of artistic license to have bad football and to have it like basically just a legalized version of a Royal Rumble. But when it actually gets to the main match, I think even like the ceremony and the build up to it, the lovely touch, the anthems, they actually played out the anthems pretty fully. They've got the stadium with their MTK Budapest to build up for Colombia and Paris, which is where the 1938 World Cup was played. So it's fairly decent for like the small details like that. But Stallone, yeah, he's got an awful lot to apologise for Kevin O'Callaghan, because he got a raw deal. Not even a goalkeeper in real life, and then gets one of the most famous arm breaks, let's say, in cinema history, all for a poor trainer and a keeper who was a liability from the off and would inspire no confidence in his back four.
Yeah, it was a disgraceful decision to drop him and put Stallone in nets, because he had no credibility, he had no trust, he was going to escape, he was going to leave at half time, for God's sake. He shouldn't have been in nets in the first place.
He reminded me, if you remember when Boris Johnson was at Soccer Aid and he absolutely clambers into your mouth, like that was what he was like coming out of his area. He was such a busy goalkeeper, it was disgraceful.
The slide tackles in this film, there could have been, I know this is the 80s, or I know it's set in the 40s, but I mean, for God's sake, there could have been at least 5 red cards in this film. It was disgraceful stuff.
In fairness,
Chelsea would have been happy with a few.
Colby was training there on the side. They love a good, I don't know what it is about Hollywood, they love a good slide tackle montage. And having played up to about Leicester senior level, I don't think I've ever really had slide tackling drills in my life.
That was interesting to me, actually, because I've never seen a team train just slide tackling.
Yeah. Well, maybe coaching's changed since I played, but I don't think I've ever heard from them. They'll go practice slide tackles, like you practice set pieces and stuff. But geez, Ozzie Ardila gets some amount of thumps in this film. I mean, fair play to him, he keeps going. I know it's a fair World Cup winner and the style of play, he does invite the knocks. But Jesus Christ, he gets lumped around this pitch. And for me, he's the MVP. I know he's the one who gives the penalty away the last week, but Ozzie man the match for me, just for your bloody mindedness to pick himself up off the pitch and keep going.
Does Michael Keane have enough role to play in this football match? Because they build him up to be, you know, former West Ham player, and he's the trainer, he's the manager, he's the captain, he's calling everyone else terrible in training. But he doesn't have a key role in this game. He doesn't play a key pass, he doesn't go on a dribbly run. Like, was it because Michael Keane was so bad at football that they thought they just couldn't get enough out of him to film that kind of role?
I imagine so, because he's not in it in any footballing capacity at all. And like, if you, it's kind of where the him and Bobby Moore comparison comes up again, because he's almost there as a kind of talismanic leader. He's only, I mean, there's one point obviously during the penalty where he's explaining to Sly Stallone that he has to save the penalty. That's his role as a goalkeeper. So it was slightly strange. I just to come back to one point that Paul made about Ozzie Ardila as well, he really reminded, you remember when you see these footage from like the 40s or whatever, and it speeds up and slows down, and you've got these really busy footballers in kind of long shorts. Ozzie Ardila has got that such kind of quick feet that he always looks like he's kind of in 1.5 speed the whole time. So he kind of suits it quite well. And he's got the little kind of side parting as well. overall, I think the football was, it was kind of immersive, really. It was like, there's always something going on. As a football fan, you're always going to have a good bit to be able to pick out as criticism. But I did quite enjoy it. And I did, as this little flick over the head, I was like, oh, you gotta love a bit of that.
It came to nothing, though. Nothing came off that. Bobby Moore headers the ball in slow motion, and it goes nowhere.
The header that ruined it, the flick alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the little, that header was from nothing.
No, it was pointless. I loved the flick over the head. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Didn't expect to see that in this film. And then Bobby Moore just headers it for no reason. Yeah. It's so bizarre. What about Pelé in this football match? Is he given enough role in this? Because I know he's injured for quite a bit. But even the scenes where he is in it, he's tackled quite a bit, which is quite interesting. They're not really playing up the role that this guy is Pelé. He's the best player on the planet at the minute.
Well, I suppose there was a little bit when he carried on the injury and he was being tightly marked. Marked is a very loose use of the word because he's getting punched in the stomach repeatedly. It looked like he was trying to dribble around and then he went around his man with a cheek and nutmeg. I'm curious about that because aside from the fact that the Allies score 3 goals in 10 men, I would say from an American, if you were not familiar with the rules of football, I would say they were probably thinking it was like a rotation, roll on, roll off type format. It wasn't particularly clear to me that they were playing with 10 men for a long time, unless you're completely aware of the rules of football, because I don't even think the substitute rule was invented by them. So it is peculiar. But I have to say, just on the football, watching it again, I would obviously remember the Pelé overhead kick. But the Bobby Moore goal is an absolute peach. And prototype from sweeper, building from the back, carrying his run up, lovely 1-2, and just the timing of the run, it was a lovely goal. And the way it's filmed is from that kind of high up angle, the bird's eye view. I'm not sure how they did, probably a crane or something like that, but the camera angle for the match are really, really good. And it's something we talked about a bit before another film. Football is very, very hard to film. But I think, obviously, it helps that he had 18 internationals playing the game. But I actually think, aside from the stupid edit of the Aussie flick stuff, I think they actually do a really good job of capturing the movement of football. And also, a big thing is technique and how footballers actually swing their foot and boot. And I mean, as for the Ardiles, you get the sense that this is like you're watching an actual match. Really, really good. Yeah. And now I'm going to talk about the Marseillaise at the end, because that just brings goosebumps, because that anthem is the greatest. Maybe next to Uruguay, he's never sang loudly. Marseillaise at full blast is goosebumps.
They don't sing those kind of songs at football matches enough anymore. It would have been a great football anthem right now. But I do agree with you in large parts of that, because if you look at the Pelé goal as an example, the Pelé bicycle kick, if we spoke about goal and how bad the technique was in that when it came to filming, and I suppose you do have to remember this was filmed in the 80s, so they're basing this off the 80s game, and I actually thought it looked quite like some of the football matches from the 80s. But Pelé's bicycle kick, to this day, I don't know if there's a better goal that has been filmed in a football film in terms of the cross looking accurate, because it was Bobby Moore kicking the ball, and you also had Pelé doing the bicycle kick, so he knows what the technique is supposed to look like. And I know it's probably unrealistic that would happen, but from a purely technique standpoint, it was actually quite good.
Yeah, it was outstanding technically. Like, I'd be interested to know how many takes that took. And I was trying to kind of, in real time, when they were kind of replaying it in slow motion from a different angle, I was actually trying to figure out whether that was the same one. But look, I mean, if we kind of go back to what was hinted at the start, in that a lot of this is aimed at potentially an American audience with Stallone and otherwise. And something like that is pretty much the most spectacular technical feat that you can pull off on a football pitch. So it's definitely going to wow a few people. And it was very well done. And I'd agree with Paul's point about the relatively true to life reflection of what football was like at that stage. Like, as you said, it is very difficult to actually encapsulate the chaos and the tactical kind of nous of both teams in any one period on film. So no, I was happy enough with it, and I think the bicycle kit was probably the apotheosis of that, for sure.
I even like the chaotic energy of the disallowed goal, because that's how disallowed goals work in matches. Nobody knows what's going on. Everyone's angry. They don't know what's happening. They turn the lines and they probably get it wrong. I even think that was... I wouldn't be surprised if the footballers, the likes of Bobby Moore, had put Houston aside and said, hey, listen, this is how it's done. And could maybe pull rank in a way that Stallone may have pulled rank to maybe get himself a bit more dramatic scenes. But in this case, I would be more in favour of footballers doing it.
Yeah, it's definitely is a nice touch that you have these professional footballers in this film and that they play a key role in it as well, because that is the key aspect to this and making it a believable football match. We're running out of time, lads, so I will get your rankings out of this before we start that. Rotten Tomatoes have given us 63% and it has 6.7 on IMDb. Paul, let you start, because this is one, as you said, this is a film that you've watched all the time. What would you give it out of 10?
Out of 10, I was going to go out of 100, I give it a 75. So I'll give it a 7 out of 10, just because I still regard The Damned United as the best football film I've seen. But I still think for pure enjoyment, escapism, and just nostalgia, and as you started the show saying, when else are you going to get a film with Michael Caine, Sylvester Stallone, Ozzy Ardile, and Pele together? So for nostalgia alone, I'll give it a 7 out of 10. At a push, 7.5.
Kieran?
I was going to go with maybe a 5.5, but I'll push it up to a 6 for the main reason that Sylvester Stallone gives a team talk where he references anal bleeding in the most odd team talk I've ever heard, so that gives it an extra 0.5 point. It is actually a pretty good film all told. The plot is kind of sags in the middle, and as I say, you kind of have to take into account that most football films aren't especially good, so given this was quite a decent mix of war and the Second World War in football, and has the star power of Kane, Stallone, Pele, etc. Yeah, I'll go for a 6.
That is the first and last time anal bleeding will be mentioned on the show as a key point. I enjoyed that scene, because that was classic Stallone, you know, the whole mumbling idiot sort of trying to be funny and nobody's really listening to him. That's where I actually thought, this guy is just playing Rocky Balboa. Like, that is the style of acting he uses in that film as well. I'm going to score this on the lower side as well. I'm going to go for a 6 out of 10, because I don't think it's as good as the other films that we've seen so far. It does have some nostalgia aspect to it. It is a good sort of mix between a football film and a war film, and it does make you feel sort of warm inside at the end of it, even though it is sort of, as a plot, it doesn't really make sense at the end. Paul, as you said, it's a perfect 3 o'clock matinee that you might see on the big movie at Christmas time on the RTE, if that still exists. I don't know if it does with Netflix. Does it exist? Is that still a thing? I don't know. Tweet us and let us know at Off the Ball. We'll take a quick break there, lads. Take it easy. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure.
What type of midfield is Herrera? He's not a box-to-box, he's not defensive, he can't do a f***ing killer pass. Why is he on the f***ing pitch? What for what? See him come here and f***ing boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and f***ing boss us. Rojo, what was his tactics? As soon as you get Rojo, just f***ing do it. We're not f***ing Stoke. We're Man f***ing United here. Watch. That was diabolical, that. Martial is playing against a f***ing centre midfielder in doubt. Take the f***ing on. Take him on and f***ing do it. We're Man f***ing United here. That was diabolical, that.
Now, you're very welcome back to Team 33. Now, that is all we have time for on tonight's show. Thanks to you for listening. My thanks to Kieran Bradley and Paul Moore for helping me delve deep into Escape to Victory. We will be back at the same time next week with another football film. But if you want to listen back to this episode or any of our previous episodes, you can find us as part of the OTB Podcast Network. The best place is, of course, the OTB Sports app. You can find that on the Google Play Store and Apple Store as well. It is the home of all your sporting needs. Back again, same time, same place, but until then, take it away, Johan.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.